Welcome everyone to season 2, episode 45 of the Premier Pod. I'm your host, Yash Bika, and this time we have a special guest with us today. Yahoo sports writer Henry Bushnell is coming on. He has written many articles about the Premier League and super excited to have you on. How are you doing, Henry?
I'm good, Yash. Appreciate you inviting me on and looking forward to this.
Sweet. All right, let's go ahead and jump right in. The biggest game of the weekend, like we always like to start it off with, Arsenal-Manchester United happened Monday night. A pretty boring, dull affair between two historic Premier League sides, a 1-1 draw again with Manchester United. The problem is they're not creating enough offensively. It seems like they can pass the ball around a little bit in the midfield, but once they get in that final third, there's just either no one is taking the go-to to lead that front line, and the attacking, I guess, part of it is just being dull. And once again, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, just a 1-1 draw, struggling to get that other goal. But for me, the bigger question is, like, where do United go from here? Because it's not like they have guys that are injured that need to come back. Sure, they have Martial, and Pogba is still recovering from the ankle injury, but you know, Martial still isn't a proven Premier League striker. Marcus Rashford is out of form, and basically they're relying on a 17 or now 18 year old Mason Greenwood to lead the front line, and that's pretty damaging and pretty scary times for Manchester United right now.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, I think it speaks to more of like the top down failure of the club, just in terms of squad building. If you think back to last summer, I mean, their big money signing was Fred, who is clearly not Premier League top six quality. And that speaks to the fact that this club is just not being run well right now. They haven't evolved to the modern backroom structure like Liverpool have, like Man City, of course, and like a lot of the top clubs around Europe. That game was not only dull, it was honestly remarkable. It was striking how flat out bad Manchester United and Arsenal both are right now. And it's a pretty remarkable failure given how much money they have compared to Man United are certainly top three in the world in revenue. And Arsenal are maybe not quite that, but they're up there. They're certainly top 10. There's really no excuse for either of those teams to be this poor in terms of quality on the field, but that's just where they're at right now. And I think, honestly, the problems run deeper at Man United.
Yeah, and honestly, I forgot to mention this. I am like me. I'm a Manchester United fan. My partner actually is a Liverpool fan, so it's always funny whenever we're talking about the sides, because he always tends to roast me on this one. But, you know, I've said this all of last season too. I always thought that they needed to bring in a technical director or at least start to build, you know, what you were talking about, that structure. You know, I was not one of those people that are like, oh, they hired Ole too early. I think, you know, regardless, I think Ole kind of earned the job after the performances he's had. And I think they did do a decent job this summer in terms of bringing Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Harry Maguire in and sort of fixing that back line.
Right.
Sure, they're still conceding a goal a game pretty much right now, but at least it's not as bad as it was last season. But, you know, when you let Romelu Lukaku go, Alexis Sanchez go on loan, and a couple other players have left the club, you know, it kind of leaves a doubt, you know, why didn't they bring in a backup player or like at least strengthen the depth of this squad? I said this before in the last episode. I firmly believe Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was not foolish enough to believe that he could rely on Anthony Martial and Marcus Rashford and unproven Mason Greenwood, all three of them unproven, to carry on that United front line and get them at least 20 plus goals. He had to believe that injuries were going to happen and they were going to dip out of form just because of the track record of those two players. And I think it's honestly, you know, the sign of the board basically thinking that, you know, oh, we signed two defenders, we should be good to go. And we saw that with Mourinho. The reason they didn't give him the money is because, oh, you finished second place with this whole squad, why do you need another center back? Why do you need another midfielder? But Mourinho basically was telling and was basically showcasing the lack of, I guess, I don't know even what to say it, the lack of knowledge when it comes to the front board in terms of how to manage a football team right now.
Yep. Yeah, and I totally agree with you that Solskjaer is not the problem. I mean, I think it's been proven out over time that there are some top managers who can make a difference in a positive way, and there are some absolutely awful managers who can make a difference in a negative way. But the vast majority are just, you know, in the middle and aren't really a big net negative or net positive. And I think that's what he is. It's more so as you just talked about. It's squad building. And as you said, I think they did. I do like Maguire was probably an overpay, but it was a fine overpay because it addressed the need. So that was fine. Wan Bissaka is a good signing. But it's more so the buildup over time and just the lack of a plan and paying Sanchez more money than any other player in the Premier League at the time, only to then, you know, decide he didn't have a place in the squad in what 18 months after that or whatever. When you compare that with Liverpool, who the players they bought to be top starting players have become that. Mm-hmm. The players they bought to become rotation players have become that. And there's a clear plan for everybody they buy where they're going to fit into that squad. And not everybody, like Naby Keita, you would have expected him to be one of those stars. He hasn't. But they always find use for players. There's always a place for them. Whereas Man United, there's no plan for, well, if this goes wrong, we can do this. This is how this player could fit in multiple different ways. There's no foresight at all.
Yeah, of course. We could go on and on about problems right with the front board with United, but switching over to Arsenal, I brought this question up maybe 2 weeks ago when Arsenal drew against Watford, and you know, we saw that defensive collapse and Unai Emery's strategy of always playing out the back no matter what happens in the game. It propped the question to me, can you see Unai Emery getting sacked, you know, maybe after this season? But also the bigger question is, you know, with the amount of money they invested in the attacking third and, you know, in the midfield strengthening, you know, basically strengthening that whole team, they still drew 1-1 against a very poor and a very, you know, lack of quality Manchester United side. Unai Emery did not take advantage of the fact that his team was a little bit more talented. And right now they're just kind of relying on Aubameyang to basically score the goals and keep Arsenal in that top four, in contention of the top four places right now. I'm a little disappointed in Unai Emery. I wanted to know, like, where do you stand on Unai Emery right now?
Yeah, I'm not super pro Unai Emery or against him. I just think I think this is a similar situation where it just comes down to the players and the personnel. Like, I think Aubameyang, I would argue, is in the right system and with the right players around him, is a top-class striker. But other than that, like, you look at that team that played Man United on Monday, and who are the top players? Like, who is the second-best player in that team? I don't even know. Is it Guendouzi? Like, there's no obvious mm-hmm. answer. Is it Granit Xhaka, maybe?
Yeah, I have a buddy that's an Arsenal fan, huge Arsenal fan, and he was not particularly happy with Granit Xhaka being named captain of Arsenal. And even I was watching the game with him, and he was basically clapping that Xhaka was coming off, or he wanted Xhaka to come off. But another thing is Nicolas Pepe. I mean, they spent 84 million on the guy,
right? That's what I was just gonna say.
He's basically being outshone by I don't want to mispronounce the name, but Bukayo Saka. Basically, I watched that game. The youngster basically looked like the $84 million player, and Pepe looked like the youngster. I mean, I don't know if this is one of those things where Pepe is just trying too much to be that $84 million man, or if it's one of those things that he'll probably need a whole season just to adjust to the Premier League pace of play and quality.
Right. Yeah, I honestly don't know enough about him and hadn't watched him enough before he got to Arsenal to really make any good analysis on him. But it is remarkable that I don't think that was a particular need for them necessarily. There are just so many other places in that squad that you could strengthen, and they haven't. And it's less so that their miscalculations of the transfer market are different than Man United's mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Yeah. Man United just splashes money on whoever, and then decides they're worthless after, you know, a year or two. Arsenal just has never really their strategy has always been to, you know, trust their scouting network and try to find those players mm-hmm. who will ultimately be bargains. Whereas a lot of other top clubs will splash out for more proven players, and Arsenal just hasn't hit on enough of those. More, you know, like low risk, potentially high reward signings. They just haven't really come off, and that's one of the reasons I think they're really struggling. So in terms of Emery, like, I could certainly see him getting sacked at the end of the year. Whether they should sack him, I don't know if we really have enough evidence for that yet. But it's certain, like, I don't know what more you can expect from him at this point with the squad. I guess you, given the shape of the top four or the top six and just the league in general right now, you could reasonably expect a top four finish this year, just with where United is at and where Chelsea is at, and so on, and Spurs certainly as well. But to expect him to be, to expect this squad to be consistently a top four squad in a normal Premier League, I think is not fair to any Arsenal manager at the mm-hmm. moment.
And that's the thing. I think they're so good attacking wise right now that I feel like they're honestly, with Liverpool, you saw my friend, that buddy that's a Liverpool fan that I do the podcast with, he kind of wants to resemble this Arsenal side to what Liverpool were under Jurgen Klopp before they bought Van Dijk and before they kind of solidified the defense. Very attacking wise, very flary, can score a lot of goals and can create a lot of chances. But, you know, they gave up so many chances in the back, and they, you know, conceded so many goals. I honestly think with this Arsenal side, you know, if they can buy a top quality center back, you know, they could be back in contention of, you know, winning trophies again, because we've yet to see how Kieran Tierney, I know obviously he's gotten back and he's played a couple games under his belt. You know, once he comes back at left back and kind of slots in there, and then Hector Bellerin comes at right back, you know, they're just kind of missing those two center backs they need, because I don't believe Socrates and David Luiz are here long-term answers. But I think, you know, if Arsenal just make the right buys, they could potentially be back to basically where they should be in terms of, like, historical precedence in the Premier League right now.
Right. Yeah, but see, what I'd say to that, though, is they could get back to where they were, yeah, whatever, like, you know, not to their height, like, you know, Invincible's height, but where they were consistently, like, top three level quality, maybe. But the gap between the top two and the rest is just so wide right now. Even if they get back to, like, Liverpool, and I think you could argue that this Liverpool team, you know, just like this year and last year, and this Man City team this year and the past 2 years, I think you could argue they're the two best Premier League teams ever. There's such a disparity and so much distance. And so much ground for Arsenal and teams and the rest of the top six to make up right now, that getting back to that, you know, baseline level that we think they should be at, I don't think is nearly enough to be competing for a trophy if you want to think about the Premier League. Now, it could get them back in the Champions League, and maybe they could compete there, because the Champions League obviously is more, you know, it's more prone to flukiness and randomness, but it's going to take a lot for them to get back into Premier League contention. Mm-hmm.
No, I definitely agree that the top two, when it comes to Liverpool and City, it always seems like, even last year, they were just above everyone else by far, by miles ahead. But going into their North London rival, I mean, Tottenham beat Southampton over the weekend 2-1, but the bigger result in the midweek, losing against Bayern Munich at home 7-2, a horrible result for Tottenham. But this is kind of a theme going on with Tottenham this season. Just something does not look right with this Tottenham team. I always thought that last season Mauricio Pochettino could have left for a bigger job. I mean, there was openings available, but obviously they closed up with obviously United hiring Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and then Real Madrid ultimately deciding to let Zidane back in the club. You know, we even heard comments with Pochettino saying that, you know, if they would have won the Champions League, he probably would have left Tottenham. He felt like he could have accomplished as much as he could. I feel like the squad is kind of getting tired. I think, you know, this is like four or five seasons of running the same squad, and they still have yet to win a trophy. Last year was their closest they've ever been. We're talking about Harry Kane, Christian Eriksen, Dele Alli, you know, the two center backs, Alderweireld, Vertonghen. I mean, like, that whole squad has basically been with Pochettino for five or six seasons now, and they haven't won anything. And I feel like, because of that, it's starting to catch up with them. And I think, you know, a lot of those players are kind of getting their heads turned to maybe joining a bigger club elsewhere so they can start winning some trophies.
Yeah, it's really interesting to think about that just from, like, a armchair psychologist perspective almost. Because it definitely does seem like, coming so close last year and everything building up to last year, there has been a bit of a letdown. And I honestly don't know that it's players' heads being turned and thinking about moving on to bigger clubs, because if that's the case, I think they would have tried to do that over the summer. And maybe some of them did. Maybe Eriksen did want to leave over the summer, for example. But I don't know if that's something that would be really a factor now. But just the idea that Pochettino's system really does require you to just be completely bought in and to be going 100% and pressing all the time and just like that full bore style. It just takes a lot mentally, and it's completely understandable that after the Champions League run and after coming so close and now just basically being back to square one at the start of a new season, it's absolutely tough mentally, and they don't have the just like the systematic brilliance and just like the individual talent like City and Liverpool have to kind of overcome that mental side of it. So I would agree. I think it's certainly affecting them in some way. Whether they'll overcome that in a month or two, or whether it's something that'll plague them all season and then we'll see wholesale changes at the end of the season, I don't know the answer to that yet, but it's certainly something that's interesting to watch.
Yeah, and like, obviously the biggest question with them last season was they made no investments. Literally no one left and no one came in last season. And obviously this season they bought in Doble. And, you know, we thought, you know, with that acquisition, that may have propelled them to be a little bit better than what they are. But even with that one signing, they're still struggling a lot. And I think, I don't know, I feel like a lot of it is, you know, with Dele Alli, he's not performing as well. And just a lot of these players have kind of let down Pochettino. But with the way this Tottenham side is going, do you think Pochettino kind of missed his chance of managing a bigger club than Tottenham? I'm not trying to throw, you know, shade at Tottenham, but obviously when you're talking about the Real Madrids, Manchester Uniteds in the world, do you feel like he missed his chance, and do you feel like he could get another chance if a club has an opening like that, a club of that stature has an opening like that available? Do you feel like he could be in contention to get that position, or do you feel like he kind of lost that moment?
So this, I feel pretty strongly that he did not lose the moment. Like, I think he could, if he left Tottenham right now, he couldn't walk into any job because a lot of the top jobs are taken right now. But like, let's say that Pep decided he was leaving Man City at the end of the season. And Pochettino left Spurs right now and took the rest of the year off. I think Pochettino would be a top Man City candidate. If Zidane left Real Madrid again at the end of the season, I think Pochettino would still be a top Real Madrid candidate. I think the past, what he's done, not just last year, but in previous years at Spurs and building him the way that he has, and at Southampton before that, and at other clubs before that, I think his track record speaks for itself, and one down season isn't going to be a problem when maybe some clubs will be put off a bit by it. But if clubs are smart, I think they will still consider him as one of the absolute top managers in the world.
No, of course. Do you feel like, you know, it was, you know, when that Manchester United position was open, you know, a lot of United fans, including myself, we kind of thought about, you know, what if Pochettino, you know, jumped the ship and moved to United? It could have been one of those things where he could have been that building block and helped build, you know, United back up. Obviously the structure is completely different than it is at Tottenham than compared to Manchester United. But in a crazy scenario, what if Pochettino was the Manchester United manager? Do you feel like that would have been a match made in heaven, or are you not the most fond of those two coming together?
Yeah, I think it would have worked. I mean, I think it might have taken some time, certainly. It's similar to how it took time at Tottenham. One thing about Man United, Pochettino has a lot of control at Tottenham at this point. He doesn't have complete control, and there are obviously financial restrictions. But United is a situation where I think they would have been willing to give him a lot, or I assume they would have been willing to give him a lot of control. So I absolutely think it would have. I mean, I don't think United would have been a top four lock this season if he had been their manager starting this past June. But I think it would be good in the long term. And frankly, I mean, that's something that, let's say, if Solskjaer doesn't make it past this year, like, I wouldn't be surprised if United made another run at him next summer and maybe depending on how the season goes, maybe he leaves this time. And I think he would be, he should absolutely be at the top of their list.
Sure. Quickly going into Chelsea, obviously, you know, getting a win against Brighton 2-0, and they obviously won in the Champions League, but bigger story for them, Christian Pulisic, their big money buy over the summer during the winter transfer window of last season, has not featured, I believe, in now 6 games and wasn't even in the 18-man squad in the Champions League. What is going on with Christian Pulisic in Chelsea right now? I feel like it's sort of Frank Lampard trusting, you know, his British boys with Mason Mount and Tammy Abraham. But, you know, as an American, you know, you want to see Christian Pulisic do well. But right now, it's not looking good for him right now at Chelsea.
Yeah, so it's certainly not looking good as far as what you would have hoped from his first month or two at Chelsea. But I think people, American fans, freaking out over him not playing is way overblown at this point. Because you kind of just mentioned it, like, it's completely understandable that he wouldn't, like, put aside his price tag and the hype and the fact that he was their, you know, biggest signing. Frank Lampard, so he has Mason Mount, who Chelsea boy, but also like played under Lampard on loan at Derby last year. He's got two veteran, like Pedro and Willian, both way more accomplished than Pulisic. Frankly, at this point, I'd say still, I mean, not worth more money because of their age, but just better on if you had to pick one winger and you had to win a game tomorrow, I'd pick Pedro over Pulisic. I'd pick Willian over Pulisic. The fact, like, if Callum Hudson-Odoi comes in is immediately over Pulisic in the pecking order, maybe that's a bit of a worry. But I also think that we have to remember that Pulisic is still, he just turned 21 like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Right. And like there have been so many, and understandably so, there have been a lot of expectations on him. But the idea that just because it's hasn't gone well through a month and a half at Chelsea or 2 months or whatever, that doesn't mean that he's going to be a failure at Chelsea. Like he's inevitably going to get his opportunities this season. And he played decently in a couple of the games when he was in the team earlier this season. So he'll get his chances, and it'll be a matter of whether he takes those chances. As far as him as a player, like, he does still have to improve his end product a lot. And I would imagine that's what's keeping him out of the team. It's not like work ethic or any like issue with Lampard, I would assume. It's just that like Willian and Pedro are a lot more polished in terms of the final ball or finishing at this point than Pulisic is. And at this point, Chelsea really needs a winger who can either score or create goals rather than just progress the ball and get the ball into dangerous positions. And that's something that Christian knows that he has to work on, and I imagine he's working on it. And there's no reason he still can't eventually be a success at Chelsea. But yes, of course, it's frustrating for him, and of course, it's frustrating for American fans who want to see him succeed. It's certainly the first 2 months could have gone a lot better.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because his last season at Dortmund, obviously Jadon Sancho, the superstar young talent right now,
right,
kind of took over that winger position over Pulisic, and Pulisic was kind of in and out of the lineup there. And then obviously at Chelsea hasn't meshed completely well at the start, but that is a storyline to keep watching, especially with American fans loving Pulisic. But
right, and the interesting thing with him is, and I think the biggest worry isn't that he's not playing at Chelsea, it's that he hasn't significantly improved since he was 18 or 19. Like that's usually a couple huge years of growth for players. He was one of the most, I would argue he was probably after Mbappe. There was a time like where Pulisic was the second most productive teenager in world soccer. And since that point, he just hasn't really gotten better. Mm-hmm. At least not on a superficial level. I'm sure he would tell you that there are things he's improved in his game. But as I just said, you know, that end mm-hmm. product is what he really needs to develop, and he hasn't really done
yeah.
that yet.
Do you feel like, you know, I haven't played the game professionally or anything, but when it comes to like delivering on that end product, I feel like a lot of times when I'm watching games, a lot of times, you know, it is lack of quality. You know, you have to just go out there and practice. But a lot of times I feel like, you know, sometimes it's that psyche, that mental factor of like, okay, a lot of people know that, you know, I'm struggling with my end product and like, you know, they overthink things. Do you think it's a matter of overthinking or do you think it's just a matter of him going out to the practice session and just, you know, practicing on a shot and just working on all those things?
Yeah, I think it's several things. It's certainly not something that is just a matter of working on it in training. Like to some extent, you have to be in the games to get it. Like there's no way you can replicate doing it in games. And he hasn't had that. He hasn't had as much game time as you'd have hoped over the past year, really. Considering that he was, as you said, he kind of got displaced by Sancho and a couple others at Dortmund. So that's part of it. Maybe the mental is part of it, but it's also like, you know, some players just have it and some players don't have it. And I guess that's the worry with Pulisic if we're thinking about it from an American fan perspective and we want him to develop into that, you know, US number 10 who is going to be the creative engine for years. And we want him to really drive the, not just the team, but the program forward. You know, like a player like Mbappe obviously just like has that killer instinct in the final third. And there are other players, other young players you've seen come through over the past few years who have it as well. There's a chance that, and that's not to say that you either have it or you don't, like you can develop it as well. And Pulisic can certainly still develop it. But Pedro early in his career was not great in the final third, I don't think. And has gotten better at that over the years. So it's something he can get better at. But I guess the worry is that Pulisic just never really gets better at that. And it's always like, he's always that player who was good, but also had potential to be so much more and never really had that, just like that, those crazy assist numbers or the crazy goal numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely one to watch out for. But a crazy sort of thing that's developing right now, obviously it's really early in the season. We see this all the time in the Premier League, but Leicester City and West Ham cracking into the top six, Leicester City at number three, and then West Ham sitting at fifth position. Obviously, they're managed by some good managers, Brendan Rodgers at Leicester and Manuel Pellegrini at West Ham. Some pretty high caliber managers that had great resumes right now. But, you know, with the rate that they're succeeding at these clubs, you know, a lot of talk, you know, we just talked about it. If Pochettino does leave Spurs, could you see one of those guys slotting into that position? And also, do you see one of these guys kind of leaving their post right now and then going abroad if a bigger job opens up, whether that be in Italy, France, Spain, wherever? Can you see them moving out of these positions in England and moving to a bigger job elsewhere?
Given where they're at in their careers right now, not real. I mean, I suppose Pellegrini could go somewhere else if he keeps this up at West Ham, but I'm pretty confident that Leicester can stay in this, maybe in the top four race, certainly in the top six race. I'm less confident in West Ham. I mean, they had the one win over United, who, you know, we've covered previously. Maybe beating United at home is not that impressive and maybe even expected. Other than that, you know, they haven't really played it. You know, their only real big test was Man City on the opening day and they got destroyed then. Mm-hmm. So I don't really see them hanging around up there, and therefore I don't really think Pellegrini will get another opportunity. And Brendan Rodgers kind of, like, I think he's found his
niche.
He's found his level. Like, this is what he is. He's not the genius who's going to turn around Liverpool. but he's also he's better. He belongs at a better club than, or in a better league than the Scottish league. So I think this is, I do. I've always been pretty pro Brendan Rodgers. I think he's a pretty smart guy, pretty good manager. So I think this is a good spot for him, and he's got a good squad that he can build with at Leicester.
Yeah. You know what's crazy? I always got to shout out the Leicester City scouting department, because my goodness, some of the bargains they've gotten. Obviously, we all know the famous N'Golo Kante, Riyad Mahrez, but Ben Chilwell, James Maddison, and Ndidi. I mean, it's just like every year they're bringing in these high quality youngsters. And obviously with Harry Maguire buying him from Hull City, but James Maddison, oh my goodness. I know last season I talked to him. I spoke about this player all the time. I was like, this guy has to be moving on to a big club. You know, do you kind of see Leicester City being raided again? Sort of like with Southampton, you know, with Liverpool, you know, Liverpool kind of buying all the Southampton players, a joke going on there. But can you see after this season, do you see a lot of those Leicester City players being bought by some of the bigger Premier League clubs or even clubs abroad?
Yes, it's certainly a possibility. Just trying to think about, but I also do think it's a case where the reason they're a top four contender is it's not really any one player who's outstanding. It's more that they just have a lot of above average or even better than above average Premier League players. You know, I'm just looking down their roster right now. Like, I don't know exactly. Like, Vardy obviously is he's going to be at Leicester given his age. You know, a big club's not really going to snap him up at this point. That would have happened 2 or 3 years ago. I could certainly see somebody like Chilwell, I guess. You know, big clubs going after him. Harvey Barnes, we'll see what happens with him. But it's more so like it's the guy, and I guess, yeah, and Didi's still young as well, and he's a player who, as you said, that was just like a great purchase for them, and he's really good and getting better. But other than that, like a guy like Ricardo Pereira from our money is a really good right back, really, really solid right back, and the type of player that can make a difference and just like raise the baseline of what you are and help you get into the top four, the top six. But he's not like that. Like, I don't think if Tottenham really needed a right back, for example, which they do, I'm not sure he would be somebody that they'd go after. He's not like a significant upgrade on Serge Aurier, just using one example. So I don't think their squad will just get completely pilfered. And I think they just, again, they've had a plan, and they've built the squad really thoroughly, and that's why I think they're not going to be here to stay in terms of being in the top four for the next three seasons. But they've certainly established themselves at the very least as that like seventh club right after the top six at this point.
Oh yeah. Kind of going into another big club, Manchester City right now with Pep Guardiola. I always thought the biggest reason, you know, obviously the biggest reason why City brought him into the club was obviously to win trophies, but was to challenge in the big European stage in the Champions League. And each year, Liverpool last season, they've just always seemed to get knocked out by clubs, you know, in the Champions League. And Pep Guardiola entering his fourth season now, I believe. Obviously, with Bayern Munich, you know, three seasons went. Barcelona won it all and left. Do you think Pep Guardiola has this mission in his mind that unless he wins the Champions League, we're not going to be seeing the end of Pep Guardiola in Manchester City anytime soon?
Yeah, I really don't know the answer to that question. and it's a fascinating question. Because it does feel like there's a portion of the fan base who thinks he has to win the Champions League at Man City to be considered a success at Man City. But you also just like with the way the Champions League is structured and with the way that one game can just ruin it for you in a given season. You never like that chase could go even no matter how good you are, that chase could go on a really long time. And I don't know what his personal life is like, you know, and what he wants out of this. So it's really an unanswerable question at this point. But yeah, it's certainly a fascinating one. And I do like, so he always, various people have argued about which is harder to win, the Premier League or the Champions League. I'd argue the Premier League is a better representation of how good you are as a team, just because it's about who's the best over 38 games. Oh yeah. And I think that's just like, that's proof of just what he's done. And in my opinion, no matter what happens over the next few years at City, like he's been a resounding success and they've been remarkable. But the Champions League is what people want. And it's harder to win from the perspective of just, you have to be perfect against the top teams. Like you can't afford that one slip up. So yeah, it's going to be fast. Like I do there. That's where their energy certainly will be this year, and that's where what the fans want to see, and that's what the English media want to see. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's crazy because, you know, you mentioned, you think the Premier League is a better representation. I always thought with Jose Mourinho, I felt like he was probably the epitome of what a Champions League manager is, a great Champions League manager is. Because if you're talking about a guy that you need to win two games on the, like, you know, knockout stage, if you need a manager, you get Mourinho. Mourinho is going to win you those two games because he will throw away his entire philosophy, everything you know about football, just to sit back, defend, hit you on the counterattack, and just, you know, get out with the win. And obviously Pep Guardiola, we all know him. He's a manager that's not really going to sacrifice his style of play to conform, you know, try to win a game. He wants to win it his way. But obviously Mourinho is a little bit opposite in that sense. But going back into the Premier League, Liverpool beating Sheffield United 1-0. In the beginning of the season, I previewed, I thought Manchester City were going to three-peat the title, but obviously that could still happen. It's very early in the season. But man, Liverpool famously have, I feel like they've meshed the goal scoring side of two seasons ago, and they've meshed the great defensive side of last season, and all turned into one big team. And, you know, we're getting the Liverpool of this season. Obviously there have been some disputes with Mane and Salah. Obviously Mane's a little upset, like he would want his team to score more goals. That's obvious. But man, you know, I just can't, like, every time you watch Liverpool, you just can't help but, like, just admire how good they are, you know, from top to bottom. You're talking about Roberto Firmino, I think probably one of the most underrated strikers in the game right now. The front three of Salah, Firmino, Mane, that midfield that just never stops running. And obviously you have Van Dijk, the best, probably the best center back in the world right now. I mean, just top to bottom, the squad, you just can't help but just be amazed by it.
Yeah, they're awesome. And actually, I think there's a pretty good chance that they ultimately they won't be as good as they were last year. But the fact that they already have a five point lead on City is, I think it's underrated how significant that is. Just starting, if we're thinking about, like, I think Man City is still a better team than Liverpool. Just when you, if you look at it from a big picture standpoint. But are they 5 points better than them over 31 games? I don't know. And Liverpool, as you said, there's no clear hole. Like, we'll see how the season develops and injuries, and City is certainly deeper, I think. So we'll see how it progresses from that standpoint. And I mean, Liverpool were, I think they were the better team against Sheffield United, but they got a bit fortunate with the goal, obviously. And yes, like on one hand, people will say, yeah, you have, like, those are the types of moments and games that you have to, that you're going to have those moments of good fortune, and you're going to have to win games like that. On the other hand, I don't know if it's obviously not, you know, necessarily sustainable. But they're perfect so far, and they'll be favored in. That's the thing with the rest of the top six not as good as they usually are. Liverpool will be favored in all but one of their games, probably. They've proven that they can kind of just, like, do away with these bad teams pretty consistently. They proved that last year. So they're certainly, you know, they're rolling right now, just as City is. And they absolutely have a shot to win it.
Oh yeah. And, you know, you mentioned this before, but, you know, the gap with one and two compared to everyone else right now is just out of this world. Because, you know, I kind of fret for the day United have to play Liverpool and City, just because, you know, United will barely get a kick of the ball. You know, it's just that they win the ball back so well. They're just top to bottom so much better than everyone else right now. And, you know, that's a credit to, you know, the front office and the management buying great players and everything. But quickly going to Watford versus Wolves, you know, obviously Wolves were the sexy team. Everyone was going on them last season. They were just amazed by how good they were with all the Portuguese players and all these players they bought. But this season they are struggling, and so is Watford. You know, it's this funny question of, like, is seventh place probably the most cursed position in the Premier League? Because we've seen that the squads and the teams just aren't built to play at Europe on Thursday and don't have enough depth to handle, you know, a weekend Premier League match. And it's kind of biting Wolves right now, just trying to compete in the Europa League and the Premier League at the same time.
Yeah, it's definitely an issue. And, you know, there's some of that is sort of just, like, you know, regression to the mean. And those seventh place teams, you know, more so just, you know, emerging from the pack via, you know, positive randomness, and kind of just, like, sinking back to the pack naturally. But yeah, I think the Europa League is probably one issue. I also think Wolves are, they're more so built to, I don't know if they're built to be like a top six club that is expected, like when they're expected to, you know, play at home against Burnley, say, for example, and kind of take the game to them and win easily by multiple goals. That's not really what they're accustomed to doing. And they were most impressive last year in their games against the big six, I thought. And if that's what you are, that like that alone, if you can compete with the big six, that alone doesn't get you into the top six. You still have to do away with the lesser teams like the big six often do. And that's one thing that I don't think they're really built to do yet. So that's one of the reasons I think we've seen them fall off a bit. Watford, on the other hand, is I think this has kind of been I think it's kind of been coming. Like they that squad hasn't really evolved. And frankly, I thought it was coming 2 years ago, and they held on and were decent 2 years ago, and then again last year. But this year, we're kind of finally seeing what happens when you cycle through a different manager every single year and don't really fortify the squad and your players age. And it just takes that, like that 1 year of age and just that slight drop off in whether it's quickness or just play a couple of players start getting injured. That can have a significant effect.
Oh yeah. It's Watford, you know, me and my friend, we always have this running meme that they just sack whenever there's five games of bad form, they just sack anyone. Yep. And they did it again this season. But kind of previewing the games for this coming weekend. First one, Newcastle, Manchester United. Again, United drawing 0-0 in the Europa League. Not looking very eventful attacking-wise. Didn't have a single shot on target. Newcastle are struggling a lot as well. I'd like to say, I'm just going to go with the fact that I'm a United fan. I'm going to say a 1-0 United win. I know they haven't won away at home in so long. It's been like 10 competitions now. But you know, something's got to give here. I feel like United, they just have to win. There's just no other thing here. They just have to win.
No, I like that. I'd go 2-0 United. I think Newcastle is really bad.
All right, there we go. Now we got West Ham Palace. West Ham in fifth place. I know you mentioned that you think that West Ham are kind of going to regress towards the mean a little bit. I do like their players. They have Sebastian Haller, Yarmolenko. Obviously, we haven't seen the best out of Felipe Anderson, but hopefully he could probably get back in form. But Palace are not the best away. Obviously, they beat Manchester United at Old Trafford. But again, Palace, kind of one of those weird teams. You don't know what you're going to get. I'm going to say that West Ham keep rolling. I'd probably go for, you know, a 2-1 West Ham win.
Yeah, I'll go. I'd agree again. I'll go 3-1.
Okay, all right. And then I'd probably say one of the bigger games of the weekend, Liverpool-Leicester. Leicester in third place right now, Liverpool in first place. This is going to be a fun game to watch because Leicester always give the top six a huge run for their money. They always are very well organized, very well coached. I think they have the quality to even maybe nick a goal here and there. But the biggest thing is Liverpool is at home at Anfield, and Jurgen Klopp does not lose in Anfield. And because of that, I would have to say Liverpool can probably take control of this game and win 2-0.
So that's definitely the smart pick. I mean, they're obviously heavy favorites. But just so we're not all going chalk, I'll go. I think Leicester can get a draw here. And they have, even though it's at Anfield, I don't have like their record at Anfield in front of me, but I feel like over the past 2 or 3 years, they've played Liverpool tough at Anfield at least a couple times. So I'll go for a 1-1 draw.
Okay, wow, 1-1 draw. Liverpool probably dropped their first points of the season on that one, but you know that kind of rounds it up for this episode. Thank you again, Henry, for coming on. It was a great pleasure being able to talk to you, interview you, and hear your thoughts on the Premier League. Make sure to check out his stuff on yahoo.com. Great writer, and it was awesome having you on.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you guys. Make sure to tune in, subscribe, rate, comment, subscribe, and we'll catch you guys next week. Peace.